everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Onigiri & Co. podcast. I know it's been a while, it's been almost 4 weeks since the last episode, but here is Eddie saving me from my, I don't know what to call it, like a streak of laziness.
Hey, hi, Alice from the podcast.
Yes, thank you so much for being here, Eddie.
Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, for those who don't know, Eddie was one of the first people on the podcast, actually, with two of our other friends from Australia. Mm-hmm. Pilots episode, and it was great, so I'm glad to have you back.
Yeah, I think we did that during COVID actually, because I remember being in my old house all by myself during one of the lockdowns, and we're like trying to figure out what to do and how to interact with other humans during the Melbourne lockdown. So yeah, I remember that. I was with Jacob and Dale about our New Zealand trip.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my god, this feels like a long time ago. So much has happened.
2020, 4 years ago. That was,
wow.
I might be wrong, but that could have been 4 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, how have you been? Do you want to tell the audience who you are, maybe to start with, since then?
Sure. So I'm from Australia. I'm currently living in the US. A bit of background. I met Noelle through a common friend. We were doing, I think, a build. I think it was Richard that introduced us. And we were doing like a build day kind of thing for our drone, like drone camp in Melbourne. And that's when we met. And I already had a group of friends that I was flying with. Noelle was more into the building side of things, and she wanted to get into it. That was when the boom of new frames were coming out, and there was a lot of excitement around that. So I think that was around maybe 2018 or 2019.
Yeah,
I don't remember exactly when. And then COVID happened, and a lot of the flying just took a pause. But you know, things were starting to pick up again, and I ended up moving to the States, which we might talk about it a little bit later in the podcast, but one of my favorite things about being here is FPV.
Yes.
Amazon next day delivery and FPV are right right up there for many reasons that I'm happy to go into in a bit more details. And I'm hoping when I go back to Australia, bring some of those ideas back with me and hopefully put some new stuff on the table for us in Australia. But yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To give a bit about your background in FPV, you're more a freestyle pilot than a racing pilot?
Yeah. In fact, I've never raced. Only tiny whoops. And I don't know if they count. I do FPV for the enjoyment and the relaxation and just being in the zone. And I found that as soon as there is a competitiveness to it, it just, to me, it just loses a lot of that is FPV for me. So it's never been an interest of mine to race. I do it more for the, it's like an artistic exploration thing, like an artistic way to express yourself through your fingers and interacting with objects, which is what we do in freestyle.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of your favorite pilots, from what I remember, is Gapit. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I still watch some of his videos. I don't know if he's watching this, but I still, whenever I get overwhelmed with the new kind of FPV videos out there these days, I just go back to a couple of his videos and remind myself why I started flying drones in the first place. And yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so do you think it has influenced the way also you fly yourself?
I think that in FPV, especially freestyle, because your style is very unique to you, but it's influenced by other people and by what you enjoy watching as well. I think that my style has been influenced by a couple of pilots, High Flight FPV. He doesn't really fly anymore. He's a kid from used to be a kid. I'm sure he's a full grown.
I picture him as a kid too.
Yeah, from Hawaii. The level of control he had, I remember thinking, wow, that's really good. Original videos, you know, Chapu and all this stuff. I think inspired me to go down a certain type of style. And I've never really enjoyed maybe because I'm too old to have the hand-eye coordination for a lot of flippy floppy proximity stuff. Mine is more, I like to think of my style more as like parkour, when you're like jumping from object to object and trying to connect the dots between two different objects in the plane of line that you're going through. Yeah. I think that's the most interesting kind of footage for me to create and also to watch.
Yeah, that's a good description. Knowing how you fly, it's probably it's the best way to describe it. So let's get a bit technical. I like asking people what they're using, because then people who might end up watching your flying, it can help them choosing what components they can use as well. Do you want to describe a bit your builds, if they're different, or do you just have one? These kind of things.
Sure. I created my own frame based on the Gapit frame, actually. And this is no surprise. Like, this is no secret. I actually spoke to him and said, hey, we're doing this. Like, I didn't want it to become a thing. I was like, oh, I'm ripping you off. Like, that's absolutely not the point of this. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to have my frame based on what I like to fly and then make some changes to it. So it is a stretch, a very stretch X. In geometry, is a very stretch X. Very lightweight. It doesn't have any camera plates for the FPV camera. It doesn't have any carbon fiber plates like the Apex or the Alien or any of those did. It's just like standoffs and 3D printed mounts that go through. So I'm trying to keep it very simple and highly serviceable. So that was my goal for this, and make it structurally sound, basically. And I'll go into more details. I've got couple of revisions of that frame, and a few people here are flying. In fact, like, majority of the people that I fly with here have one of them, and
wow,
they love it. And it wasn't ever my intention, and I'm happy that it happened. But thankfully, it's not like I need to push it, because this is just a hobby for me. For a lot of people, it's their job, and I understand that. For me, it's a hobby, and I'm glad that it happened that way. I think it removes some of the pressure from, you know, making something great. But back to what I fly, I still fly 4S.
Oh, wow.
I never made the switch to 6S. The Thunder Power Adrenaline Packs, the 4S Adrenaline Packs, the 1300 milliamps, you can find them as cheap as $16 each here.
Wow.
So it's hard to say no to that. Like, if you buy it on Black Friday, the last batch I bought was $16 each plus shipping, which is very, very cheap. And those batteries are really, really good. Like, this is not sponsored by anyone. I have to say that. But from all the batteries that I've flown, they're the best in terms of their chemical longevity. I destroy them physically before chemically, and I abuse them. Yeah. So that's one of the reasons why I haven't switched to 6S. Also, I don't have a 6S charger. I know that's no excuse, but it's something to think about.
It is, you know, a little fun fact. When I did my switch to 6S, I bought everything. And then the day I wanted the charge, I was like, I didn't think that I didn't have a charger, and I have to ask a friend.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's no excuse, but those little things add up. Something else about 6S is my biggest constraint, really, my biggest thing for not switching to 6S is the weight. If you start adding weight, you're going to start breaking arms easier. So my full all-up weight of my quad right now is 590 grams, and I fly with a Session 5 still. And I haven't bought a Hero Mini 11 or any of that because of the weight as well. Like, I try to keep it as light as possible. That has been, for me, a winning recipe. I also like how it flies. I've flown my frame on 6S from other pilots here, flying with a heavier action camera. And, yeah, the power of 6S outweighs the weight in terms of the feel. But when you crash, the wreckage is just a lot uglier to see. I just haven't had the need for it. And I still have a bunch of 4S motors that I fly. I don't have my quad here with me. It's in the garage, but it's a Franken-squad. Like, it has three different motors, two 207s and 1:23:06 and 1:22:05. Started off as a 4-in-1 ESC. One of the ESCs in the 4-in-1 blew up, so I put a single ESC in the arm, and now I have a 5-in-1, what we call. It flies really good. Like, it's the same quad that I brought with me from Australia almost 2.5 years ago.
Wow.
And we don't fly in grassy, soft patch of land here. It's all concrete and metal, and crashes have been gnarly. So I'm very happy. I broke an arm, in all fairness. But I did fall from a bridge. I was perching a bridge and I fell like 500 meters, like half a kilometer. there's a video, but maybe we can link the footage, the DVR in the yes. comment section, because I recorded DVR, and yeah, that was the only time that I broke an arm on that frame. I also don't fly very risky. Like, I take calculated risks and I don't fly super fast as well. So that helps with the durability.
Super fast. It looks fast though. So maybe because you fly those straight lines and you follow.
It looks fast.
Yeah, it looks fast. Like, I've watched you live and I was like, holy crap, this is fast, you know? So I think maybe to you compared to other people you think of when you think fast, it's less fast, but it's still fast in my opinion.
I think it looks fast because I fly close to objects. I fly low to the ground and I get right in there. Like, I try to get with the object that I'm trying to interact with, like, and I think that creates a illusion of going faster than you actually are. My camera angle is like 20; it's not very high.
Oh wow!
But having a Stretch X, you need less angle in the camera to fly at the same speed of a non-stretch quad. So, So I've been flying that and. Right now, I'm on my second build. I'm building a second quad. So I extended the back due to popular demand to fit HD video systems. So the original could not fit any of the Vistas or any of the digital systems out there. Mm-hmm. So I extended it a little bit with the help of one of my mates from Australia as well, Troy. He's the one that helped me design the frame and has helped others in the group for us. So anyway, we went back and forth, came up with the design. There's a great company here that Turnaround Times is also great at. They helped me a lot with all the hardware, all the press nuts, everything. Like, they fit everything. I'm really happy with them. And so I used them, got a prototype back, and one of my friends, Casey, he was one of the test pilots for the frame initially for these HD version. So he flies HD Zero, which I started flying at the time the V2 VTX was not out. I didn't want to change my frame to fit a huge, like, I don't know if you remember the first, it looked like a cake. It was the Freestyle VTX. The initial one was just too big. Mm-hmm. So I sold my system to him. He's super happy with it. And then a week later, the V2 was announced, which is the size of a Vista. And I'm like, well, okay, well, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So we extended the back. You can fit now a HD system on it. And that's why that's what these guys here fly. Most of them, I'm the only analog pilots. Oh, and I'm analog, by the way. Still.
Yeah. Yeah.
I still fly analog. I've tried them all. I've tried absolutely all of them. I think they all have a purpose. This is not the topic for this conversation. There's a lot already of that. But for me, I like the simplicity of analog. I'm used to the breakup. Makes me enjoy when I have good video. It reminds me analog reminds you you're alive, basically, and I appreciate when you have good video. And the cost as well. It's super cheap. You can pick up a VTX for like $30. Anyway, that's my setup.
Okay.
I still have the Tyrannus. That's also something, that's my oldest gear, I think. I bought that in 2016 and, well, it's almost 8 years old. Jeez.
Wow.
Which Tyrannus is it? X9D plus SE.
Wow.
Carbon fiber one.
Yeah, you bought it. Did you buy it at the hobby store?
Yeah.
I was like, is that the one that I'm thinking of? Wow. That's Tyrannus can last forever. You know, sometimes I love my Tango too. Like, I love the fact that I'm not breaking it by just transporting it because I'm a mess. Yeah. But there's one but, is that I miss the sticks of the same one as what you have. Because I used to have it, and I miss... I'm still playing with my rates and you know, sometimes depending on how I feel, depending on the season, I'm like, I need to change my rates again, Jesus. But yeah, so I wish I had not sold it and I had kept it just for a few years. I've had the Tengo, it's the Tengo 2, right? So it's a few years old now, a bit more, just to see how it would feel to go back on the old one, because I don't have the reference anymore. Yeah, so that's the big question for me.
I have tried most of the radios out there, I've held them in my hands, and the closest one in terms of how it feels, the weight, where it sits in your hands, stick travel, the closest one to the Tyrannus is the Boxer. Mm. So if you know anyone with a Boxer, just try it. You might like that one. Yeah. Casey used to fly, my friend. What is real? That's his Instagram and YouTube name and the FPV world. Mm-hmm. He had a Tango 2 as well, and he was very limited in terms of the throw. And as soon as he switched to the Boxer, his tricks didn't improve dramatically, but it was easier for him. Mm-hmm. So it's just about finding what's good for you and what your brain and your muscle memory automatically wants to do. So find your right gear. I think it's good.
Yeah, Tango 2 for me improved just the quality of transporting it, and because I was on Crossfire, it was just easier straight away, you know, than having my module on my Tyrannus, and not forget an antenna when you're an hour and a half from home. That was just like, it improved me because of my brain, but in terms of actual flying, sometimes I don't know, it doesn't click as much as it used to, and I've only realized this recently. But also my stick time has dropped drastically, so you need to come back because we need to fix this.
Well, that's the plan. I've talking about coming back and all that, I've been here for we're in March, so 2 years and 3 months, something like that, and I love the FPV community here. It's growing. Like, there's a lot of growth in FPV. Mm-hmm. So I'm in Sacramento. I'm in Northern California, and Sacramento is not really an FPV hub compared to other places here. Mm-hmm. But still, we have, I don't know, we regularly fly with, I can think of 30 people in the group that are actually active, and we have a Discord, and it's well organized. It just makes me think of, you know, back home, no one can be bothered with anything, and it's like everything is met with indifference and irreverence in terms of just how we do things back home. And here, like, it made me push a little bit more and to actually organize things and do events. A couple of weekends ago, we went to the American Canyon Banda, and that is an epic spot on the West Coast, and it took a lot of planning to make it happen. There were a couple of pilots from the West Coast. Peter Vex was down there. I got to hang out with them and see them fly live. And who else was there? ATEC FPV, also from Portland, also from the West Coast. Bobby FPV made it down there. Crazy kid flying. That's just stupid. makes me want to rethink about my life and how I fly. So it just takes a lot of effort to organize those things, and there's still that drive here to do that. People are still engaged with it. I've also started flying fixed wings again. Mm. There's a lot of potential for that here, and things are cheap.
Yeah,
things are very cheap compared. Well, not very cheap, but a lot cheaper compared to back home in Australia. Anything I order, it's here tomorrow. So it's hard to not want to do things, and you know, and there's a lot of stores have a lot of rewards options, and it's built for that. It's easier. There's also a lot of competition, which brings the price down, and you know, but it's been great. It's like I said, it's one of my favorite things about being here is FPV. And everything around it, the people, the hobby, the places you get to go to, people that you meet as well. It's been great. I'm gonna miss some of that. We're planning my girlfriend and I to come back to Australia sometime between July and August this year. So I'm just stocking up on things that I know are gonna be hard to find there. Especially for the plane. I've added some cool stuff to my planes. I've moved to 1.3 video for real long range stuff. But I'm excited. I'm excited to go back and hang out with all you guys again and start doing more things and, bring new ideas and hopefully a new energy to the FPV world back in Australia.
Yeah, I hope we will meet your energy. Also, you're coming back in winter, which I don't know how good this is going to be with, like, keeping your hype up. But we can always go to Queensland, right?
That's something that I would like to do. I would like to organize trips, even if they're local trips, barbecues and things like that. We do that here a lot. We stay local. People still have responsibilities and it still, costs money to go places and do things. But we've had a couple of barbecues here where everyone just brings what they can and we go to a park and just do things. There was a built night a couple of months ago, maybe less than that, where we just rented a room in downtown and we just went there, brought our tools, and we were just like, it was a built night. So people were building things that they needed to build that they just couldn't get to. They didn't have the motivation to do them at home by themselves. All right, we'll bring them together and we're all building. And it's kind of like a joint effort. So that was nice.
I want that.
That was nice. That was nice to do. And there were a couple of new people that joined the group on that week. And they went there and they were asking lots of questions. And what's this? What's that? How does it work? So it was also about spreading the knowledge. That's been really good. That's been a real good positive.
That's good. So you moved to America because of work and your current partner? Is that was the reason? And that was how can I say? What else? What was your first impression? How long did it take you to get into FPV there? Did it go amazing straight away, or was it hard to find people to fly with? How was that?
Well, I like to organize things in advance. And before I left Melbourne, I was looking at how the FPV community looked like here, and I joined a Facebook group called Sacramento FPV Mob. And one of the administrators there was Casey, who ended up being one of my closest friends here. And we started chatting. I was still in Melbourne. We started chatting and they're like, why are you coming here? FPV is not good here. It's like, I don't think you know what you're saying. and then that's how I met them. That's how I met that group. And I came here, I arrived, and I only had my drone, I had my quad, I had my radio, I had everything except batteries because I put the batteries in the container where that got shipped here. And anyway, I was flying 6S batteries on my 4S drone for a couple of weeks. They were lending me batteries, which is nice. I remember the first time I went out and met a couple of people there, and it was, I think, the first week that I got here. Yeah, it was pretty easy. And for the most part, people in FPV are pretty open and friendly to newcomers. And and for some reason, coming from Australia, I was like, everyone wants to talk to you.
Yeah.
So that made it easier as well. Great bunch of people here, and I'm going to miss them. Everyone's saying, oh, we've got to go to Melbourne and fly there. I want to meet your friends. We can make something happen.
That would be so cool. And then we actually go to a place that really shows how Australia is, if we're allowed to fly there or something like this. Like, that would be really, really good. Well, speaking of being allowed to fly, I'm actually really interested in your experience with FPV from a legal or illegal point of view in the US. Like, have you felt a big difference going there?
No.
No?
No. We mostly fly. There's two ways this conversation can go: remote ID or flying at, there's in FPV, there can be a lot of private property trespassing if that's what you want to do. And for some reason, pilots love doing that. Some pilots just go and that's the thing that they do, and that's their whole entire channel based on. Or is that what you want to do? That's fine. I haven't had any issues with that. The people that I fly with are pretty responsible. We don't fly if there's people around. We try to like get away from people, trying to avoid things. I have a couple of times there have been incidents with homeless people here. There's a lot of homeless people, and when you're in the goggles, like you're pretty defenseless. Like if someone can come, and I try not to fly by myself. I don't feel comfortable flying here by myself, unfortunately, because the places where we fly, the fun things that we do with, office parks and all that, they're all downtown, and there's a lot of people walking around there. And I've never had any incidents. One of the people that I fly with had an incident at a golf course here, and they're every like it's if it's gonna happen, it's gonna happen anywhere. But for the most part, we try to stick to the rules. Like I don't fly near airports, and I try to just be smart about it and choose to do it like that. And majority of people that we fly with here are like that. There are a few outcasts, but they don't fly with us as well. So
Okay.
no
And in terms
issues.
of location, oh, sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
Of location, do you feel like, obviously, I almost know the answer, but I want to hear it from you so I can have a little tear rolling. Do you feel like there's more variety of type of locations in the US compared to
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. It's just prettier to fly here. There's no doubt about it. Australia is very flat and dry, and there's so many footy ovals that you can go to.
These are my two spots.
I know. I said it deliberately. I know what I said. And I like that little shed looks like a bus stop that you
We'll
power
go
lift.
there. We'll go there. You can have the tears rolling as well, thinking of the US when we get
I can't wait to power lift that. Yeah.
there.
The places here are really good, and most of them are office parks that are empty on the weekends, or in summer they're just like at 6 p.m. no one's there. And because public transport is non-existent here, everyone drives, so they all have huge car parks, parking lots, sorry. And flying those are really it's really fun. It's really, really fun. Apart from that, there's open spaces, but I mostly fly the plane there, in open spaces. It's fun to fly. We have, I think in Google Maps, we have about, I don't know, 35 or 40 different spots that we fly here within 40-minute drive. So it is really good. And if one is taken, or by taken, I mean it's busy, we just go to the next one. And they're fun. I'm not bored of any of them. There's a weekend designated area that we go to. There's also a weekday, some abandoned office parks that are empty. Really fun to fly because there's scraggle everywhere and they look kind of like abandoned. But there are office parks, and there's a lot of things to interact with, and it's fun. Also, the weather here is amazing. The weather where I am, it's sunny, even in winter. Like we get a couple of rainy days, big storms, and then it's sunny. And even if it's cold, you want to go outside and do things. The sunsets are really, really pretty. There's no cloud coverage, so like you get the gradient of the sun, which looks really good in the camera. Good looks really good in on an action camera, and flying at that time is really, really good. I don't know. I don't know of any other country that I've watched through FPV that is as well suited for FPV as America, for many reasons.
For
Many
what other
reasons.
reasons can do you think of any, like, on top of your head?
Just the amount of people that like to fly here and that are doing RC stuff. Not just FPV. There's also drift, like drift cars and crawlers and planes and wings and submarines and like all sorts of things. Basically anything that you can stick a receiver to it, people are doing it here. And I think it's because just there's just more people in general. So the pool of potential interest in a hobby is larger. Economies of scale as well, more people buying things, price goes down, it's more accessible to everyone. The fact that you can drive 10 minutes and, you know, hit three different spots on the same day and they're all amazing, that also helps. And people are more committed to it as well. People are more committed to flying FPV, and I think
I wonder that's why. Do you fly with the same people in, from the same age range, for example, as here, or are they younger, or it doesn't matter how old they are?
No, it doesn't matter. We have people from, I can think of someone that's just turned 20 and one of the oldest blokes in our group, probably around 60. So there's majority are around my age, but, you know, mid-30s, early 40s. That's the majority of people. Also, I think because it's, you know, it costs money. And when I was young, I couldn't afford any of this. And now I can. And that's also a big thing. But there's young people and old people. And yeah, there are a couple of women that fly here. But majority, same in Australia, majority are like 95%, if not more, actually, are men. It's a very male-centric hobby, this one.
Well, it's so interesting that you have ideas for when you come back because, and again, I'm on a high-energy day, even though it doesn't show, but mentally I'm like a positive mindset. So I'm feeding off your energy and I'm like, what could we do when you come back so that first, you don't get depressed, and two, we bring a bit of FPV community together here. So recently, because my partner is in drift, they did a lady drift day at Calder Park. I don't know if you have heard of the racetrack. And so all the guys who usually drift brought their partners, wives and girlfriends, and we all got to learn how to do donuts and figure eights. And I was thinking, we should do that with FPV, you know, but I don't have a group of friends yet. I know my good friend Sam in Melton, which is the spot you talked about earlier. So I fly with him there. And then that's almost pretty much it, because my good friend James, he hasn't flown for a while because he broke his drone. And like you said, it's expensive to fix. And he broke his GoPro. So he's just like, he's having a break for a while. But then that's it. And they both have partners, but I'm not going to do a freestyle day with only two partners. It's good, but when I picture it, I'm like, oh, we need a little group of like at least 6-10 people. Yeah. So would be good to organize these kind of things. But once we get to build a little community around Melbourne. So we'll see.
Maybe we can start with, well, you know, Lethal FPV was a shop that sponsored me for a while in Australia, and there's a group of people that are already established there, but the most of them are racers. We've got Sam Heaps and all these guys. They are racers, and a lot of them, I've found that people, like old school people like you and I, are hard to come by. It's a hobby that it kind of like it peaks, and then everyone goes full in on it. And then they lose interest and go somewhere else. I don't know. There's something about this hobby that I think attracts people with a little bit of ADHD. I know a lot of people that have a hyper focus on drones for a while, and then they're gone. It's gone. I'm probably one of the odd ones out where I've had a steady kind of growth in the hobby and stayed engaged. I've had months. There was a time last year where I was going through some stuff that I didn't want to fly. I don't think I touched a drone for, I don't know, 6 months. But I went back into it and, you know, little by little kind of started to get interested in it again. And what we can do probably to help this is just be realistic about the people that fly, and we have to be committed to wanting to grow. And even if it's a small group, it doesn't have to be a large group, because you can't just fabricate more people out of thin air, right? But And in my opinion, I think flying smaller groups is better if you're actually flying. Helps with all sorts of things. And that's something that we can do. We can start with, realistic, small goals and then see where people go from there. And yeah, I know from the group that I used to fly with, they don't fly anymore because I think I initiated a lot of those fly days, and without me being there, it kind of just like they had other things, other hobbies that they do anyway. So it's like, okay, well, so we'll see what happens when I go back. I intend to keep flying. I don't see myself not flying, at least in the foreseeable future. It's not something that I do for a job, so it doesn't burn me. I haven't been burned like others that, start doing this for work. So for me, it's an escape, and I love that. I love the technical side of it. I love the social side of it, even though I'm not very social, depending who you ask. I think having like-minded people come together and talk about something and fly, I think that's everyone in any hobby will tell you that, that's something that brings them together. And yeah.
It's interesting what you say with people with ADHD people. Like I have suspicions that I have something going on. I don't know if it's ADHD or if it's being on the spectrum or
I
but
think we all do,
yeah, I think well I
to some
told
degree.
yeah, my therapist said everybody has like traits of something. So but when it comes to hobby, I always say I like to do lots of things and I just don't have enough time. So I love music. I love the drones. I've started karate again because I was missing it. It's been my childhood, hobby exercise. And I like drift people because I hang out with them now. And so sometimes I'm
Photography.
photography, yes. Yeah, all these kind of things. I like walking my dogs. It's not a hobby, but it takes time, doesn't it? So, and I don't always do this regularly. I have phases. And at the moment, FPV has become something that currently I do when I can, which obviously is not the right mantra to have if you want to keep up with your level. Also, sometimes because I don't fly exactly the way I used to, I'm like, oh, I go fly and I'm like, oh, you can't even do that now. It takes stick time, but
It does.
at the same time with karate, because I've been a bit more consistent, I'm able to do things that I used to do when I was 15, and I'm like, oh, so it's such a weird dynamic with hobbies when and we're adults, we have work, we have household tasks to do. It's so much to do, but I'm thinking what works best for me is when I have someone who wants to fly and who's motivated. And my friend Sam, who's my main flying buddy and friend, he's been really good at telling me, "Hey, I'm flying there that Saturday or that Sunday. Do you want to come?" And I just go for an hour, and it's been really, how can I say? He brought me back to FPV alongside to my friend James, who's not flying now, but both of them were bringing me back after the pandemic. And so it would be nice to think, like all of this, I went on a tangent, but all of this to say, it would be good to think of a group thing to do, even if it's like two, three, four people together when you're back. And we go to all our local spots. Sometimes you go where I am, sometimes I go where you are. And I know good spots that are a bit of a drive, but because you mentioned doing it as a group and maybe doing a picnic or a barbecue or something, it's like a beautiful lake. And I think it's a 2 hours drive from my place. So I don't know where you will be when you're in Melbourne, but I think it's worth it as long as we go. I wouldn't go there on my own, for example, or I would go maybe with Sam, but he has a family and sometimes it's hard, because the weekend is the only time you can do it 3 hours. It's just tricky. But if we do it as a group, 100% worth it.
With just like with everything in life, it's just about priority and wanting to do it. Everything else can, you can find a way. You can have a family, you can have responsibilities, we all do. But if it's something that is important to you, you're going to find a way to make it happen. And you just have to find people that prioritize, sorry, flying and getting together and having a good time. And for me, flying is 50% of the reason why I do it. The other 50% is to hang out with friends. Sometimes I'd rather go and hang out and I'm notorious here for not flying sometimes when we're all getting together and everyone's like, "Are you gonna fly or not?" And it's like, "Oh, I'm just chilling." And ask anyone around here and they'll tell you that, like I start fixing people's problems and like looking at troubleshooting stuff. And I should have, I got the expert badge on Facebook recently. So it's good to just share that knowledge, and I enjoy that. I enjoy the building part. I enjoy flying. I enjoy talking to people about drone and otherwise.
Yeah, that's something we didn't say in this episode. Like, you're able to look at my footage and be like, "This is not tuned. Like, what are you doing?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And I have my little build here that hopefully, well, it will be finished. It's almost finished. I have to finish. It's the long weekend here, so I'll finish it and probably go for a fly. We have a good weather, a bit windy because Melbourne. But I'm thinking I'm gonna tweak it. It's with Kiss FC, so I have presets now as well because it's Kiss Ultra.
I
So
have one. I have one in my garage. I bought it out of it was an impulsive purchase. That fly controller like flew off the shelf here when it hit, and I was like, I need to have one just in case, and if not, I'll just sell it. Like most of not most 50-50. Fly better fly and the other 50 fly Kiss here, but more people are going to Kiss with this Ultra V2 one. I've flown it. It's really good. But I'm so committed to better flight, and I know how to. And that's the thing we can go into if you want, take the direction here. But it's I like how both can fly great. Both are great flight firmwares, and they do what they're supposed to do. Kiss has a certain feel that some people like. Betterflight has a more elastic. I like to call it like an elastic rubber band that you kind of like start fast and you can finish slow. Kiss is more like robotic in my eyes. It always has been. And for my style, I prefer how Betterflight feels. But yeah, why do we start talking about this?
Because I directed the conversation saying my new build is Kiss, and I was saying you're really good at also all the technical stuff. Obviously, we said you have your frame, but you're really good at tuning and fixing and.
I went down that rabbit hole a long time ago, and no, I know enough to know the basics of how PID controller works. Not just on drones, on everything really. There's a lot of stuff in everyday life that we use that use a PID controller. And yeah, I enjoy that. I'm an engineer by I'm an engineer by trade, and that's just how my brain works, and I like solving those technical problems. And yeah, my friends, they just make fun of me for all sorts of tuning related stuff.
I wasn't making fun of you, by the way. I'm actually very I only know two people that I can talk tuning with is it's you and Blackbird FPV from Switzerland.
Wow. I'm honored that you're putting me up there with Blackbird.
Well, yeah, I just don't know how much he shared with me, but because I don't have that much knowledge, I know what P, I, and D do, and I know what happens when there's too much of it or not enough, but that's it. That's my very basic entry level knowledge that I pretty much didn't have to practice with because I've been on Kiss forever and I've had Steel's template to follow for a long time. So, and then I had Snake FPV template because I changed my build, so it was so easy for me to just be like, "What works for you? Okay, cool." But yeah, so every time I've talked with you or with Damien, it's just yeah, I like it. I like, listening and learning. I don't like doing my own research. I don't know if it's because I'm lazy, it's probably that. But when a friend explains things to me that they're passionate about, suddenly I'm like, ah, oh, yeah, I can listen to that.
Yeah, I mean, we all learn differently. We're all intrigued by different things and how we get to them. It doesn't matter. It's different for everybody. And yeah, no, I'm happy to share my knowledge with people, and it's something that it comes natural to me. So,
Yeah, if you forget to fly on group days because you're helping people, it really means it's natural. And as long as you enjoy it, that's what matters.
And we go out for 2, 3 hours, and I can spend an hour just talking to people, and then the next half an hour I fly a couple of packs. And also I don't fly more than I think 5 is my limit. 6, I'm starting to break stuff. And then 8, it's just total brain meltdown. So I have a threshold of how many batteries I can fly. I've never flown more than I can't remember. I think it was Snake that used to fly 50 in one go.
Yeah.
Or something like that, something extremely high. And I was like, wow, okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, I go out to have fun and not to just feel stressed about having to do something. That's also something that a lot of people, like with vlogging and all of that, there's a lot of pressure in trying to get footage. And I think that I don't have that many videos that I think are worthwhile uploading to YouTube or Instagram or anything, but I'm sure I'm being hard on myself. But the ones that I've recorded have been ones that I've gone out without the intention to do an edit, and then it just clicks and it just looks good and I like it. And I was thinking of a song to go with it and it pairs well. And that's how a video is created for me. That's how edits are created for me. I can't go out and say, okay, I need to get footage today because I'm behind on my Instagram. That's definitely not my goal here.
It's really true. Content creation is, I've said that in a lot of episodes with different people, and every time it comes back, because content creation is very, it's extremely linked to FPV because we are flying cameras. Because I discussed that with my partner for a while. He said, well, I drift, but I don't care about having footage. And I said, yes. And you can fly without recording, but you still have a camera. Mm-hmm. So it's tempted to put another one that records, or even your DVR, you know, and so I think that's why it's linked, and it's important to separate things sometimes and be like, I have a GoPro. It's because I like HD. If you don't fly HD, obviously now it's even more tempting to record every time with HD and digital and stuff. But also, I think it depends. Some people can record. I've seen people recording and having the intent of making a video, and they still do beautiful flying. And, you know, it's, but I know that other people, it puts stress on them. I was part of this, but I put stress on me for anything, like to do the dishes. I'm like, I have to do it now. So it just doesn't work. Even with the podcast, you know, I jokingly started this episode saying, oh, it's been a while, ha ha ha. But I'm not ha 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 at all. I'm like, oh, it's been 4 weeks and I'm annoyed, you know? So I understand. And, but it's good. Like, I think you were being hard on your flying. Like, you do good flying all the time, in my opinion.
Thank you. Thanks. That's nice to hear. And yeah, back to, you know, putting pressure on what you do. I think ask any content creator, any subject on YouTube that you go on, and they will say, you know, that there's a lot of pressure to put a video, and then the YouTube algorithm will punish them, or I don't know, if, you know, they don't continue with their usual routine and all of that. And I think that's just destroying a lot of mental health in the society right now. A lot of people are suffering a lot because of that added pressure of everything. Life is on top of that. So, and the moment that becomes something hard to do, I think it's just not worth doing anymore.
Exactly. I had this conversation again with my partner. We had a like 1 hour drive, like we always do in Australia, you know, recently, just to visit friends, an hour and a half. And I was saying, oh, you know what, I just want to leave everything. I don't want to be online anymore. And he said, why? I said, because it's not enjoyable sometimes, and I feel like and I don't even do as much as I used to. But all of this to say that we had this conversation that I came to a conclusion that social media nowadays, they don't help creators. How can I say? People who don't want to make this a job and are just creators and have an idea every 2 months, because that's how ideas work and inspiration work. It is not you will be able to share it, but it will not have a reach. The same reach as someone who has different ideas or copy other people every weekend, for example. And I'm not saying that's what people that publish every weekend do. Some people genuinely can have ideas because they think about it. But, you know, social media has changed. It's not the same YouTube as when we all started FPV. It's not the same Instagram as when we all started FPV. And so we have to accept at some stage, if you're like me, if I'm or you, you know, that it's okay to have ideas and it's still okay to share them. It doesn't matter at the end of the day how many people are going to see it or watch it, as long as you're happy with it and you put it out there because you're happy with it, you know? So
I think there's two different kind of people that post on social media and on these platforms. People that monetize that and that is their job, and others that do it because of, for the love of it. All right, it's a labor of love, and it, they don't care if it reaches two people, you know, your mom and your girlfriend, or it reaches, you know, the entire internet. So
yeah.
I think that's when most of the creative comes alive, like doing it because something that you are passionate about came to be, not because you had to. And I don't know, I think that's just that every artist or every person creative will tell you that, and that's what FPV is. You know, the editing and all that is very, very creative. It's a very creative thing. And trying to find, you know, how stressed I was, like when I was trying to find, I don't know, the perfect song to go for a specific footage. It loses the joy of doing that, and then you stop, and then you come back to it, and it's like, oh, actually, this works.
Yeah. Is FPV your main creativity outlet?
I think it's my only one. It's definitely my, I don't think I have any other hobbies other than RC. Mm-hmm. It's and I can't do many things at once. I'm very, I was talking to my girlfriend the other day, and I was having a coffee outside in the courtyard, and it's like, my life is very compartment, like there's compartments for my life and everything.
Yeah.
And I can't do two things at the same time. I can't multitask. And I think hobbies will take that as well. Like you have to focus on something, and I like focusing on one thing at the time. So yeah, RC, FPV is my main hobby and my main outlet of distractions and doing things other than, you know, work and life.
Yeah, for sure. And FPV on its own can be such a source of creativity. Like even you put it a bit to a certain extent by being like, no, I want my frame. I want to create my own frame that fits my requirements, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, anyone could do that. And just having the, like, back to what we were talking about, having the drive, the motivation. I don't know if you ask me right now, if I didn't have anything, I don't know if I have the energy right now to start from zero again. But because I look back and see everything that I've achieved over the last few years and the knowledge that I've gained and all that, it kind of motivates me to do more. And little by little, like I don't intend to do a lot in a short time. It's more of a gradual increase of, you know, doing things, and it's iteration, right? So you go from one revision and you make a small change, you test it, and then I do that for work as well. So that's just my everyday at work. I'm a software engineer, so we work in little bits of codes at the time, we test, we improve, we go, and I apply that to everything in my life, including creating a frame, building a frame. Mm-hmm. And designing it and getting it cut, and you know, I'm lucky that I have the resources to do it. I was watching a video, where was it, on Facebook, on the INAF, this is for the software for planes, mm-hmm. INAF page on Facebook. There's people from all over the world. A small village in Africa, this guy made a plane out of foam, styrofoam, and very rudimentary, very basic. And it had like 600 kids around them, and they were incredibly, just, you could tell in their eyes that they were like, what is this sorcery? So we're lucky that we have access. What I'm trying to say is we have access to this technology. We have the resources to make this happen. So I think doing something with it creatively and leaving, I don't want to say a legacy because that just sounds so pretentious, but leaving something that you've done. And I like to look back and see, oh, I made that, or I created that, for however small it may be. I think that's part of what drives people, some people, to do things. And
It's so true. I read something yesterday on Instagram. It was just a post, someone describing like what they have or do in life now because of someone they've met, you know, and I'm like, this is so true. Or even memories. I will always remember when we went flying to a sort of office park and I had my little Apex 4-inch with me. Mm-hmm. I remember this session like if it was yesterday, and you know, it's a while ago.
Yeah,
and now when you come back to Australia, but some people in the US will keep flying your frame. And whether we call it a legacy or whatever, I really like this kind of things. I know that I have tick of language, you know, way I spoke, that I sort of stole without realizing from my best friend like 25 years ago, you know. So it's just how things happened. And and in FPV it definitely happens. There are way we're flying or tricks we do that we once saw someone do it, and then it just stuck to our brain, and I'm like, this is why I do this trick, because this person was doing it. And I'm like, oh, I love that. So yeah, we're all like a sort of I like calling that FPV sponge. Like we absorb the energy of the other pilots we interact with, whether it's physical or just you know, in the brain and some ideas. So
spiritual to some point. I know exactly what you mean, and it's kind of like a network of interconnected brains, and we're all influencing each other whether we are aware of it or not, in some way or another. That's what kind of like what defines us, how we interact with others, and not just in FPV but like in general, and coming together. And you know, it's kind of like a bigger organism, if you will. And it's a good thing to see. And yeah, we're talking about like, oh, they're saying what's going to happen when you go back to Australia. Like, I want to keep flying your frame, and I can just have more arms or bottom plates or whatever cut and sent to them. It's no big deal. Like, we live in a very small world now with how things are. So it's not going to be a problem.
And
That
leads me to, because we're reaching the end of the episode already, to the one of the final questions. It's what's next for you? You said you're usually prepared. So how do you see your comeback to Australia, especially regarding the hobby, but also obviously personal life and keeping touch with people from America?
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't figured that out yet.
Okay.
I don't have an answer. I don't have an answer to that question yet. I think that I'm going to just continue doing what I'm doing. I mean, I'm not, my interest in FPV is not going to change because I go back to Australia. We'll just have to adapt and understand that, you know, we're not going to have amazing bandos and office parks. We're just going to have wet puddles of grass and some footy ovals, but it's still, there's still interest in that for me. And like I say, like 50% is the flying, 50% is the people. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to have to make it work. And personal, I don't know. I don't know where I want to live in Melbourne still. We're going back to Melbourne. The plan is to go back to Melbourne. Everyone I know is there and my work is there. So one of the things that I really miss a lot, and this is work related, is going into the office, interacting with people. I've worked from home for the last 28 months. I've worked from home like every day, and it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. I want to have that interaction with people again, may it be FPV, which I have here, but it's just different, you know, like back to what I was saying earlier, it's just different buckets of my life. And I miss that for work.
Yeah.
And I miss my friends, and I've made some really good friends here, but I'm looking forward to going back and seeing old faces.
Yeah, that's good, you know. And there's a good thing in every situation. And a long time ago, my friend said, "Yeah, some doors close on you, but that just means that others will open." It's always how life works. So hopefully, you know, you have another rediscovery of things when you come back here. You'll see it with a new perspective, which is the beauty of travel as well.
Yeah. I'm very grateful that I got the chance to travel and come here and experience a different side of the world. And we've traveled a lot here. That's also something that I'm going to miss. I love traveling, and it's easy to travel from here. Like, flights to London are like $400 and you get there in 9 hours. So access to Europe is very easy from here. And also traveling within the States is really good. There's a lot of nature. There's a lot of places. It's a world of its own. And I don't think I barely scratched the surface, if anything. So that's something else that I'm going to miss as well. The ability to travel so easily, like in Australia, everything's so far away.
Yeah, and the problem as well is recently, because I started this new job. New job, it was in 2020, but because of the pandemic, I couldn't go really regional. So it's only been 2 years where I can work regional and I can see a little bit of Australia. And sometimes, well, I flew some spots and I was like, oh, it would be good to come back with people. So it's great. And the downside is sometimes you travel for fun. Like I went to a regional park with a friend, but the problem is because it's national park as well, you're not allowed to fly there. And the sceneries I've seen, I was like, I just want to fly.
You
want to
fly there?
Yes. So I don't know.
Could you get a pyramid?
I wonder. It's actually quite hard, but that's all the things I think we could explore when you come back. Like if you feel like you have energy to make things happen, we could start thinking, well, how do we discover spots that are legal? Or available regional, but also can we start finding ways to, you know, have some specific area that could be allowing us to fly or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming today.
thanks for the invite. I enjoyed being here and seeing you again. I know that we haven't really lost touch. Like every now and then, like we'll drop a comment or a message somewhere. And I'm very happy that you invited me here. I was like, of course, I'm going to jump to the opportunity to do this.
Yes.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
And thank you.
Yeah, look forward to going back home, and we'll have some fun back there.
For sure. It's a promise. So then, you know, I have to make it happen. It's like the first time I finally came flying with you, you kept saying, come fly with us. I was like, yeah, soon. And then it happened.
Yeah.
So it has to be a promise.
Well, if it becomes a promise, then you're putting pressure on yourself.
So yeah, that's true.
Let's just see what happens. Like, yes. Like we say, we'll see what happens.
That's a good point. Finally, because you share some footage, if people want to have a look after this episode, where do you want to send them?
Probably YouTube and Instagram. I don't have that many videos up there, but if there's anything that, is worth sharing with the world,
it will be
up there. So we'll put a little link in the description or whatever, however this thing works.
We'll do on YouTube and also on Spotify. So
thank you.
No worries. And thanks everyone for listening today. It was a while. I know we joked about it, but you know, I always find it hard to not share. So thanks for still being here and listening to this episode. Thanks to my patrons, because I have a Patreon and we have some chats on Discord sometimes. I've already talked to them about the lack of episodes and they were like, that's okay. So yeah, it was good to have you, Eddie. And if anybody else loved this episode, give us some ratings or share it with your friends. And that's pretty much it, you know. Thanks for your support, and we'll talk about another topic in hopefully 2 weeks' time.
Thank you, Noelle. And thank you, everyone. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.